This is Gary, and yes, this is my show. It is called I'll Have a Beer and Talk, which is exactly what I'll be doing for the next 20 or so minutes. Are you ready? Each week, I hide myself in an undisclosed location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon, to record myself randomly choosing a craft beer, and then I tell you what I learned about it by looking up information on the internet. Then I drink it while talking about a couple interesting stories that I read on that there internet that you may have missed. Then I release all this out into your ear holes. I know I've been falling behind on my show schedule as of late. Recovering from an almost house fire has screwed up my routine, and then having most of the Pacific Northwest on fire kind of makes the recovery process a little tricky. And then I had a dental emergency thrown into the mix. But I'm back. Everything's good. And you know that I'm ready for beer. To help me randomly choose a beer from my stockpile each week, I use a thing to make the selection for me called the randomizer. And that's the sound you are currently experiencing. Just gotta wait for it to bring results. Aha! It is done spinning, and the randomizer has chosen Blackberry Farms Brett Saison, a 7.5% ABV Saison aged in red wine barrels. Perfect for the end of the summer. Saisons are not so much a specific flavor beer, more of a style of beer. They are a traditional farmhouse style, which is brewed in the winter to be consumed all summer long. The most dominant flavor sensations are earthy yeast notes, fruity aromas and flavors, tartness, low bitterness, and an ever so slightly dry and sweet aspect. This bottle is fancy and has a cork in it, so guard your ears while I switch to the beer mic to pop it. This is one fine-looking beer. It's kind of an orangish color with a pale white head and smells very, very tart. Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Oh, it's quite lovely. It's a bit more bitter than I expected it to be. It's a kind of a high bitterness kind of in the roof of your mouth, but smooth, very smooth, clean on the back end, just perfect, very effervescent, and just a beautiful, beautiful beer for the summer. Saisons are really awesome. Hey, it's September, and you know what that means. Oktoberfest is right around the corner. Yes, the annual celebration of the marriage between King Ludwig I and Princess Therese on October 12, 1810 will start this coming Saturday, September 16th. I need to get prepared. I have an appropriate German hat, but I really could use some lederhosen. You know, a problem I have with wearing a culture-specific traditional clothing, like, say, a kilt or lederhosen, is that I have a hard time finding footwear to go with it. I find the matching traditional footwear uncomfortable, so I like to go with something way more comfortable, but still appropriate to the outfit. Lucky me, Adidas has created official sneakers for Oktoberfest, according to local rag Willamette Weekly and Business Insider. Released on September 2nd, the Made in Germany shoes are styled like traditional Adidas sneakers, but have some very special themed features. The inner fabric has white and red checked pattern, matching the patterns on shirts traditionally worn under lederhosen. The back cap is embroidered, a gold Prost has been stitched on the outside, where the model number usually resides, and the shoes themselves are black with three gold stripes on the sides. Not only that, but the outer layer is coated with DPBR, which is a hydrophobic substance. That means the shoes can repel any beer spilled on them, or any other liquid that you might encounter when surrounded by people drinking lots and lots of beer. Hooray! Unfortunately, the shoes are $240, which I guess in the shoe world is a bargain, but that's kind of beyond my price comfort range, and they are only available in Europe, which is an issue for me because I am based in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. Anyway, if you are in Europe, you can purchase the shoes at 43einhelb.com. That is 43einhelb.com. Hey, maybe one of my 6 European listeners could get me a pair? So there's this beer fad going on called shower beer. I don't quite get it. The way the shower is and the surface structure above the iHabit bunker, there is nowhere to rest a bevy without getting shower water in it. I don't know. Maybe I'll try it next time we're at a Friends of Dead Hunter papering conference at the hotel. Anyway, if you're into the whole shower beer thing, you might want to know that a brewery has its sights set on you to purchase its offerings. Dipley.com reports that Swedish brewery Pang Pang has formulated a beer specifically meant to be enjoyed in a nice hot shower. The beer, smartly named Shower Beer, is a 10% ABV pale ale. It comes in 6-ounce bottles, which, you know, your initial reaction might be, but Gary, beers usually come in 12-ounce bottles. WTF! There's a reason for the tiny bottles. Pang Pang worked with the design company Snask to make the perfect bottle design to fit in a standard shower caddy and still be easy enough to hold if you get prune hands. They up the ABV to make sure you get the equivalent buzz from just half the amount of beer. Since it's only 6 ounces, you can down one in about 3 gulps, ensuring that it remains cool while you get your shower on. The first run of shower beer sold out quickly, but a Snask representative has said that they are currently looking into exporting shower beer to the U.S. In the meantime, here's a life hack. Pour a cold beer into a hot-cold insulated tumbler with a liquid-tight top. I use one for my morning coffee and daily cool water and occasionally beer-fueled late-afternoon walks with my wife. That way you can put whatever beer you want in it and have it remain cool and pure during a shower beer session. You know, maybe I should follow my own advice there and try the shower beer experience. Speaking of beer, one thing that can get frustrating is watching a good/bad movie with friends while drinking, and you have to pause it a bit if someone needs to grab another cold one from the kitchen. Yes, first world problem, but it is a problem. Thankfully, Engadget says that Panasonic is all over this and has shown off a concept fridge that responds to your voice commands and leaves the kitchen to come to you. The appropriately named movable fridge is about the size of a cube fridge and is essentially mounted on a Roomba-style rolling platform. The fridge uses a depth sensor and LiDAR, which as you know stands for light detection and ranging, to maneuver around your home without crashing into anything. It would utilize the same continuously listening technology found in, say, Google Home or Amazon Echo devices to respond quickly to your requests and leave its base station under a kitchen counter and roll your way, returning to its dock after you've retrieved your chilled food or drink needs. Panasonic intends this device to be marketed towards the elderly or mobility challenged and has even considered adding a warming plate on top so it can carry hot meals. I suggest adding some robotic arms, too, and hell, why not even just have a built-in bottle opener? And you know what? Make it look like an R2 unit. Hey, R2, bring me a beer. You know, friends, people often come up to me randomly in the street and say, you know, I'd really like to start making art utilizing handmade paper, but I don't know where to learn about how to do such a thing. Could you help me out? To which I always answer, of course! My world-famous podcast is supported by Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio, Pulp and Deckel. Its mission is to keep the art of papering alive with workshops, demonstrations, creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products, and working with artists in creating all styles of art through the medium of paper. Browse a rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things we do with the art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckle.com. Mention I'll have a beer and talk, and we might even give you something special. Many years ago, we lived near Boston. You know, the Boston in Massachusetts. By the very fact that we live there, we have been automatically marked as Red Sox fans. I have very little interest in sports ball, but I have attended a game at Fenway, and it was fun, even with overpriced mediocre beer. And yes, I am aware by my shaky logic that I could just as well be labeled a Yankees fan since I grew up in upstate New York. Whatever, these are my rules. Anyway, that simple part of my past is why I was amused when I saw this story on Gizmodo. According to a complaint filed by the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox have been using their Apple Watches to steal signs, which are not physical signs, but the hand signals pitchers use to communicate with catchers as to what pitches will be thrown. By having team personnel watch instant replay videos to see the signs and open up their minds, they then would use their Apple Watches to communicate with trainers in the dugout on their Apple Watches, who then could communicate to batters what pitches they will be encountering. Sign stealing isn't explicitly against the rules of Major League Baseball. In fact, it's been around since the start of the game itself and has taken advantage of, at the time, high technology in each major instance, but it is frowned upon. Of course, Red Sox fans are totally cool with these shenanigans, mostly because of the rivalry between the Yankees and the Sox. So anyway, the Sox can beat the Yankees is A-okay. I'm amused by the fact that the Red Sox found another perfect use case scenario for smartwatches, beyond the health tracking and notification triage uses that I have for them. They've basically created a form of telepathy. Cheating telepathy. Go Sox! It's time for another tale or two about Pizza Tech, the semi-regular show segment about the convergence of high-tech and fast comfort food. A little while back, I saw the most perfect Pizza Tech story. Domino's is experimenting with autonomous vehicles for pizza delivery in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Driverless cars would pull up to customers' houses, signal that they have the pizza they ordered waiting, and provide them with an access code. And then the customer would come out, enter the access code, and retrieve their hot pie from the driverless car. However, that's not exactly what's going on. TechnologyReview.com sets the story straight. Domino's is not testing a fleet of autonomous pizza-delivering cars in Ann Arbor. Domino's is testing customer reactions to the idea of autonomous pizza-delivering cars in Ann Arbor. Each specially modified Ford Fusion delivery vehicle has an actual human driver and researchers inside. The driver drives the vehicle, and the researchers observe the customer. Domino's says that they want to, quote, lead research into how self-driving vehicles may play a role in the future of pizza delivery. Which, yeah, if it's easier to have self-driving cars deliver pizza than self-flying drones, I'm okay with that. Domino's went on to say that they are, quote, interested to learn what people think about this type of delivery, and want to focus on the, quote, the last 50 feet of the delivery service. Basically, they find that customers okay with coming out of their home to retrieve the pie. Now, this research may seem silly to you, since they're not actually using any kind of autonomous technology, but it is important to know how mentally prepared people are for autonomous vehicles driving and flying around. I remember a story recently about people slightly panicking about a seemingly self-driving minivan rolling around Virginia, but it turned out to be another psychological test on people's reactions to the idea of cars with no drivers motoring around. The driver was hidden in the driver's seat. I look forward to the day when I can see driverless black Trans Ams taking the place of patrol cars, if you want my honest opinion. And I can't seem to talk about Pizza Tech anymore without talking about the latest crazy thing KFC has implemented. The Verge reports on KFC China bringing out a new type of payment system. Instead of NFC or Bitcoin, a special KFC in Hangzhou has begun accepting smiles as a form of payment. The location is called K-Pro and is a special KFC specializing in salads, juices, and paninis instead of fried chicken to appeal to younger customers and their health-conscious food desires. Smile to Pay, which has been developed by Alibaba subsidiary Ant Financial, utilizes a 3D camera and a, quote, liveness detection algorithm to scan a customer's smiling face for 1 to 2 seconds to confirm their identity. And it's actually a smile to confirm your identity to pay with previously set up method as opposed to a smile to pay method. But smiles as a form of currency is a more whimsical way to talk about it. Anyway, Ant Financial has thought about people trying to impersonate authorized users, which I'm sure we are immediately thinking of now. Head of biometric identification technology at Ant Financial, Jidong Chen, said, on how we detect when someone's photo is being manipulated when someone is falsely impersonating another person, we prevent this by merging software and hardware by linking sophisticated algorithms with the 3D camera. We can prevent biometric spoofing. The system also works well in recognizing individuals' faces. A video shows that despite changes in appearance of an individual, such as a change in hair color or style or having heavy makeup on, the system can still recognize the same woman each time. Which is cool and terrifying that facial recognition has gotten so good. Great for buying things, not so good if you just want to go for a walk by yourself to get away from it all. Might as well just stay in an underground bunker drinking beer and have autonomous or pseudo-autonomous food deliveries. Alright, it's animal story time. Arizona bark scorpions are not something you want to accidentally step on. Their sting causes, quote, excruciating pain, followed by numbness, tingling, vomiting, and yes, even death in some cases. The scorpions use their natural defense against animals that normally prey on them to great effect, being able to kill birds, reptiles, and rodents, but are completely helpless when preyed on by pallid bats. Pallid bats shrug off bark scorpion stings like they're NBD. Which is no big deal if you're not a snake person. They are completely unaffected by the venom, even when injected directly with it, in concentrations that would kill mice instantly. Seeing as how the ability to shrug off painful scorpion stings might be of medical interest in pain management, University of California Riverside biologist Khalil A. Razak led a study to figure out the bat's secret. They took a close look at the bat's dorsal root ganglia. Here's a quick biology lesson. Dorsal root ganglia are nerve cells found in clusters within spinal nerves, and they contain what are called ion channels, which are associated with pain receptors. Scorpion venom causes so much pain because it interferes with those ion channels. Much like how the film Scorpion King interferes with my belief that humanity is capable of creating beautiful things. The pallid bats have certain amino acids within their ion channels in the dorsal root ganglia, which are suspected to act as a kind of shield against the venom's effects. The researchers also found several unique mutations in the pallid bat genome that seem to alter the way pain is sensed, suggesting, quote, an unknown mechanism of pain modulation in the pallid bat that involves altered ion channel formation. It is hoped that the research can be utilized to synthesize the altered ion effects into a deliverable drug, which would create an entirely new line of pain management medications. I guess this is why Batman never had a scorpion-based adversary. They couldn't actually hurt him. Well, technically, you can have Batman fight Mortal Kombat Scorpion in the fighting video game Injustice, but that's not bat canon. Hey guys! Surprise. This show is supported by Pulp and Deckel and listeners just like you! If you get value or entertainment from this show, maybe you too would like to support me. You can always hire me for some voice and audio production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. If you feel you or someone you know might have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know! Email me at gary@pulpanddeckel.com. That is GaryxPulpanDeckel.com. Rates are reasonable. And if you could be so kind to rate and review the show on iTunes, the more I have at discoverability will go up for people looking for beery tech podcasts on, you guessed it, iTunes. And you can also support the show directly with money. If you enjoy my show each week, you can donate at least $1 a month to the show at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. Go to patreon.com/ihabitradio and become my patron. You'll be joining a very attractive and intelligent group that already support me there. Thanks, guys. Lol, you are the best. Hey, episode 100 is pretty much right around the corner. Just one more episode to go. I may have figured out something special to do to mark the occasion, but if you, the listeners at home, have any ideas or questions or something you'd like me to do, drop me a line. Want to know where I got the idea for the show? How I got it all started? What I've learned? Ask away. And please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, plants, aliens, and the very air that you breathe about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to Gary@pulpanddeckel.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram at iHabitRadio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/iHabitRadio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!